I have to pee, but I'm going to hold it until after the podcast.
Me too. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey.
Welcome back, guys.
Wow. Yes, I mean, I guess for regular listeners,
Nothing's changed.
It's just another week. But I have been gone into the other side of the world, the far side of the world, for the last 31 days.
So like New York?
Australia, New Zealand.
Wow.
We toured the Behind the Myths tour to Sydney, Perth, Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, and Auckland.
These sound like made up places.
And they are all amazing cities, actually. Because Australia is so spread out and far apart, we weren't taking a bus this time on this tour. We were performing like every fourth or fifth day, which is giving the trucks enough time to drive the 1,200 miles.
Oh my goodness.
It takes to get to where we are.
So how many shows over how many days?
I think we did like 14 over 31 days.
Okay. When you tour the US, it's like every day or every other day.
Yeah. When I tour this fall, when Jamie and I tour this fall, it'll be 26 cities in 32 days or something like that.
Wow.
We work 6 day weeks. It's actually, the rhythm ends up feeling great.
Well, because you just do a show and then you get on the bus, go to sleep and wake up the next morning, you're in a new town, right?
Right. And like I did last year, you know, forcing myself to get out every day and see something and photograph it and write about it was a really important practice. And I know I didn't do that a lot in Australia, and I'm sorry. Sorry for the lack of updates. But this, and perhaps another subsequent podcast, should serve as a kind of a review of how it went, and I'll have some pictures to support it.
Okay, so first things first.
Yeah.
How many deadly animals over the 32 days did you see? I mean, that's what everybody asks.
Encounter.
Well, yes.
Did you see any drop bears?
I got fooled by the drop bear in my first interview.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sad.
I didn't know about a drop bear.
Oh, yeah.
What's a drop bear?
Drop bears, you got to watch out. They fall into your car, and they're deadly animals.
It's literally like a snipe. It's Australian ribbing of the tourists.
Wow.
And so I did this morning zoo show, and he's like, how many drop bears, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know how many drop, I don't know how big drop bears are. And he's like, oh my God, I fooled Adam Savage into thinking there was drop bears. Now I realize I'm doing a Kiwi accent there. I'm sorry. I got all mixed up with my accents while I was down under.
There you go.
You just got to chew the vowels and the consonants in the back of the mouth there.
And then in Australia, there are distinct accents in each part of the country.
Well, of course, everywhere there's distinct accents.
Yeah, no, I know.
We just don't hear them because we're, you know,
we really don't
savages.
Hear them. But boy, they're unique all over the place. It's quite fascinating.
When you sent the trucks, this is a weird question, but when you sent one of the things that always blew me away out of Australia is they do 3 and 4 deep tractor trailers through like the central part of the country.
Right.
And I know that it's a big, then there's lots of empty and there's not much traffic, I assume. But an 18-wheeler with 4 trailers on it seems just reckless and wild and out of control.
Except that there's almost nobody on those roads, from what I understand. And the distance between gas stations is so great that passenger cars pretty much don't make the trip because you have to bring extra fuel.
Wow, what? Really?
Yes. You're driving just between cities?
No.
Or from
across the middle of Australia.
Sounds like a good challenge.
Through the deserted part. You actually
we should
have
go
to
do
bring
that.
Wow. Extra well,
that's,
fuel.
That's, I keep turning Norms up thinking it's me. was that you?
Let me say from the get-go that, and I told the Australians I would keep their secret, but I'm blowing it right now. Australia is a beautiful country.
Of course. It has to be, right?
I was not prepared for how beautiful it actually was. And look, we live in San Francisco. It is a gorgeous city. And we think of it as like a city on the water because the water is part of every view and the bridges are part of the lore and the physical layout of the city. But not like Australian cities are part of the water. They are deeply in and of the water with little ferries that run everywhere and waterways and houses running. It's like Sausalito everywhere. The density of San Francisco, but it looks like Sausalito.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so everyone's historic.
Every city. On the water. Brisbane is beautiful. Melbourne is gorgeous. I mean, everyone knows Sydney, which is also magnificent and incredibly varied. Like San Francisco, there's a million different places and microclimates and stuff. And the people were ridiculously friendly. Like, I look, I don't know. Maybe it's just going to a country with like healthcare and reasonable minimum wage, but everyone is so nice. And there's just, I don't know. I didn't hear a car horn for the entire time I was there.
But how did they let the other people know that they were driving poorly?
It was a really, really a great grand tour of Australia.
So let's do chronological. Yeah. What was the first city you went in? What did you do in that city?
I think you did a show there, Norm.
Actually, no. Oh, I landed. Wait. We landed in Sydney, where the rest of the crew went off to was Melbourne. Or I'm having trouble remembering the order. But, oh, that's the shop next door.
Your next door neighbor has a table saw, shop. It sounds like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's it could be routing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
At any rate, we flew into Sydney a few days early, my wife and I, to get over jet lag and to see one of our best friends, Alice, who lives in Sydney. And we hung out with her as much as she could stand us. We kind of like, do you have plans today? Great. Do you have plans tonight? Great. Do you have plans tomorrow? And so she took us around to some great stuff. She took us to the hipster neighborhood in Sydney called Newtown.
Okay.
And there's a beautiful Camperdown Cemetery. I wrote about that in a blog post. And then we did a bunch of press, a full day of press. And then that night we went off to Melbourne, I believe. And in Melbourne, we did our first performance of the show. And interestingly enough, the Australian crowds are a little quieter, I think, than American crowds.
Hmm. Like, more respectful. They don't know when to cheer or how loud to cheer.
It's not respectful, and not to say that they were disrespectful. It's just I think it's less of a thing to yell at a concert. Huh. You know, it's like, oh, you know, we're here at a concert, and so we're going to watch it. Right. There's a notable thing in the U.S. You get a lot on stage by talking about the city you're in. People love it in the U.S. when you talk about their city.
Hello, San Francisco.
I mean, it's just it's a great way of bringing the audience closer. They love that discussion. Australia, that's not really, you know, sure. Yeah,
they don't have a real sense of pride about the place that they live.
I don't think it's a lack of sense of pride, but perhaps just a different way of expressing it.
Or maybe just a resistance to cheap bags.
Cheap audience pandering, yeah. Sure. Also, surprisingly, the New Zealand audiences were louder than the Australian audiences. Hmm,
really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have a long musical history, and, you know.
I think of Kiwis as being more restrained, but apparently not from the stage.
Wow.
How about that?
Fair enough.
Mythbusters the idea originated from Australia. So
it is. It's produced out of Beyond Productions in Sydney.
The response or the fan reaction and your interactions with the audience, what is that like?
On that front, it was great. It was a good portion of every audience knew that we were an Australian show, and we talked about that at every performance, that we consider the show's sense of humor to be deeply Australian in that Anglo-Saxon taking the piss way.
Mm-hmm.
So after Melbourne, I think, how did it work? I think Melbourne, then Adelaide, then Perth, then Brisbane. But I could be wrong about that order.
We're not going to judge you. There's
okay,
not a quiz.
Don't judge me. No, it was a long trip.
Yeah, it's been a while, too, since that leg of the trip. So.
Also, thing one and thing two came with us for the first 2 weeks of the trip.
Your children.
My children. And then we sent them back on their own.
Huh. Wait, what? You sent them international? Do they connect through whole America or through, like, Singapore or something?
No, they flew from Sydney to L.A.
Oh, okay.
They went through customs in L.A. and then got in a plane and flew to San Francisco.
Did you? What instructions?
They could have dropped off in L.A. and that's it. That's the last you'll see of them.
No, but okay.
Become celebrities of their own.
Thing two knew enough to pull Kevin Mitnick's business card out of his wallet before going through customs in L.A.
Okay, that's good.
So for those uninitiated, Kevin Mitnick's business card is a set of lock picks, laser etched into stainless steel.
So we were on a flight this morning my wife and I were on a flight with our daughter this morning from Portland, and saw a friend on the plane. He was like, hey, I'm going to tell you something that's going to really destroy your world. And he was like, one day she's going to get on a plane without you. Oh man, you are a bad person. So what did you tell them before? Is this the first time they've flown I mean, I know they've flown unsupervised
before. They've flown internationally
alone,
but they have flown by themselves many times. I'm actually kind of astonished how much they have flown.
When did you start that? I mean, I don't mean to get into like parenting business.
When
here,
did I start flying them alone? I think the first time they flew by themselves, they flew up to Seattle to see their maternal grandmother, Noni.
And was
it might have been nine.
Both together?
Yeah.
Okay, so they at least were a team.
They were a team.
Two brains working instead of just one. That seems like good.
Thing two did not like it. He doesn't like the takeoff. He didn't like the takeoff.
Mm. Okay, but he had flown before.
He had flown before. Okay. Oh, yeah. They've been flying since they were six months
old. Yeah, I got to imagine.
But this flying alone on Southwest from San Francisco to Seattle, that was intense for them.
So did you make sure that they knew not to make jokes going through customs or to talk about the drugs that they'd ingested or any of that
trip?
Stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They already know joking, no nothing.
It's not a funny
place. It's liberating,
place.
I'll tell you. To fly for the first couple times on your own.
Oh, actually, the time that got me was, see, when they fly alone when they're younger, the airlines have a whole system in place.
Yeah, the unaccompanied minor.
Yeah, and
process.
You go to the gate and you wait while the plane taxis and takes off. You as a parent or the guardian has to stay there. And then someone meets them at the gate and walks them all the way to you. It's this whole process.
Like there's signing and ID checking and all sorts of stuff.
It's very gate to gate. And it's very thorough.
If you have to transfer, they take you as I did this as a child. They took me to a little room someplace right. Where they had cartoons and like 15 different wow. age kids. And we had to wait in limbo. And then when it was time to go board the plane, we went back to the gate. And when we were on the next plane.
Airports don't lose children.
Sometimes, but you think you'd hear it on the news if they did.
Well, so at a certain age, they start to get old enough to fly by themselves, depending on the airline. And for some, it's 13. For some, it's 14. And for some, it's not until 15.
And it's also depending on the kid, too, right? I mean, like,
it depends on
your feeling about your child, right?
Of course, it depends on your parents' feeling about their kid's ability to manage going to the airport. But when Thing One had to go to do something, I can't even remember what he had to do. Oh, he was going away for a meditation camp. He does a meditation camp a couple times a year.
Okay.
And it was the first time he was flying an airline in which I didn't need to escort him to the gate. So I just drove him to the airport and we walked to security and I watched him go through by himself. I got all choked up because it was like, there he goes.
You stayed until he's through the metal detector, picks up his bag,
like
turns around and waves.
57B.
Well, and there's multiple stages of that too. Like a direct flight to Seattle where you don't have to make a big change in a huge multi-terminal airport is a completely different thing than like flying through Chicago or Atlanta or even Dallas.
Chicago or LAX.
Yeah.
Transferring between airlines and LAX. If you're not on the same airline, dude, that can be a while.
I went to
Heathrow.
Oh, Jesus.
Or as I refer to it, Children of Men.
What is it, Amsterdam?
Oh. Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, so back to Australia.
So back to Australia. It was funny. We spent 2 weeks with them, Mrs. Don't Try This and I, with the Thing One and Thing Two. And of course, because you're traveling with your kids, you yell at them all the time because they're screwing up and their hotel room smells like boy sweat and dirty clothes.
I can only imagine.
Oh, it was a horror show. We actually wouldn't let them have their room cleaned.
Wow.
Because it's wrong to do that to a hotel
cleaning person. I mean,
to have to step into that room full of boy sweat and Doritos ground into the carpet. So what we did was for each hotel stay, I think they stayed at three different hotels. They had to clean their room at the end, reasonable enough so that it could be clean. And then we left a nice tip for the cleaning lady.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, that works.
Look, it's also, we're trying to inculcate them with the value of like, people do this. Yeah. You can't just go to a hotel and like drop your clothes everywhere. And then someone else, I don't think it's right for a 15-year-old to go to a hotel where it's like, yeah, I can do whatever the fuck I want because someone's going to clean it up. Nope.
You'll never believe what I use these washcloths for.
I don't even.
It's the upworthy headline.
Reason, right? Yeah. That's what the tip is for.
No, I wasn't. Okay. Oh, my God. Wow.
Oh,
I apologize
the
in advance.
You will go. Julie and I did a couple of, my wife, I know I said, Mrs. Don't Try This. Julie and I did a couple of hikes while we were in Australia. When we were in Perth, we got sort of stir crazy at hotel living It's a very hard way to travel because it's almost like a vacation because you're only working every fifth day, but it's not quite because you're working every really third day because there's press to do and there's travel days and it's there's a lot of stuff going on.
Stuff going on back home. And
right. Yeah. And so when we landed in Perth, we were both kind of like crazy. So we drove down south. We drove down south of Perth to a cape called Cape Naturaliste. It's about 3 hours south, and we stayed at this beautiful lodge owned by the Pullman Group hotel company. Mm-hmm. And we set out in the morning from the lodge on a thing called the Cape to Cape Walk. Now, the total walk is 158 kilometers. We did 15 kilometers.
Okay.
Which is a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's a long walk, yeah.
It was just under 10 miles, and mm-hmm. we were beat at the end of the day. We stopped at a hotel called The Caves, which was absolutely gorgeous. And then we caught the taxi. So we caught the taxi back to our hotel. And
now that grammar joke's gone.
Spent a nice night there and then drove back to Perth the next morning. And it was a lovely way to kind of, we love road trips. We love driving, even if it's on the other side of the road.
That's a fun adjustment if you're not used to it.
It is. I've actually gotten pretty good at it. We did some traveling in Scotland a couple of years ago. The only problem I have is that the roads are so tiny.
They're narrow.
I've never been to Australia. Like no shoulders or like the lanes are
small?
No,
there's lots of shoulders, but the lanes are narrow.
Oh, wow.
Hmm. Small cars, too.
Small cars, but it's also really rough on the passenger.
Oh, because I'm sure you're
the driver. Yeah. When you're hugging the middle lane, it's your inclination to kind of be able to see the line, but that puts the driver into the verge, as it were.
Yeah. Oh.
So we both, as passengers, were like, nah, yeah, yeah, gnashing our teeth and freaking out. There was a lot of that. And then the second hike we did was in Auckland. We took the ferry over to Waiheke Island, which is a beautiful, beautiful island, about a 30-minute ferry ride, and with a gorgeous hike. It was a bunch of gorgeous hikes. It's a really big island. We only got this one, like, 4-mile loop done. But we were, how does this work? We were 3/4 of the way done with the loop, and we were thinking, well, we can go to the town, which will be another hour and a half before we get back to the ferry, or we could just head back overland. Lincoln head back overland, and it's 1 hour back to the ferry. And then Julia looks at her watch, and she says, when will the ferry get here? And I said, it leaves in exactly 31 minutes. And she's like, I think we can make it. I'm like, back to the ferry. So we get back early, and she's like, come on. And by the time we decided, it was 28 minutes.
So you made a 1 hour walk in 28 minutes?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
We ran. It was such a thing. So it was this thing where we like
cross country running
over a hill where we see the ferry coming into the harbor and we're running along the path.
That's some amazing race.
Oh, it's totally awesome.
You need a Mark Burnett score for that.
It's true.
You
know, just bum, bum, bum. Where's Phil Kogan?
Of the reality shows,
yes,
that would be the one I would want to do.
Yes, no,
seems
it's
like a good,
fantastic
good
show, and he's a wonderful, wonderful host and producer.
He seems like a charming man all
he
around.
Is. I've spent an afternoon with him once.
Oh, cool.
With him, Padma Lakshmi, and Heidi Klum.
Was this?
Oh, I remember this. Yes.
I was doing some Emmy press in LA a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's really funny.
That's right.
Very strange group.
Reality show.
All very, very intelligent, super smart people. Just not a group I ever expected myself to find
it's like,
chatting within a green room for an hour and a half.
Heidi Klum, Adam Savage, Phil Kogan, and Padma Lakshmi are in a boat. Guess what happens next? I've been reading a lot of Upworthy while I was gone. I'm kidding. Okay, so a couple of hikes, couple of good hikes.
Couple of good hikes, lots of good driving. Oh, driving, yes. So I buried the lead. In New Zealand, I wrote to my good friend Greg Broadmoor, who's an amazing designer of the Dr. Grodbort steampunk comic books.
What a
love those!
They made actual props
that you can buy. They've been in video games.
They have jackets and they have their video games and stuff. And Greg is an amazing designer. Also designed all the weapons from District 9.
Yes.
I'm a big fan, and he's become a good friend over the years. And I wrote to him and said, I'm coming. Can I come see Weta? And he said, absolutely, or absolutely. That was a terrible cue.
I've never been more jealous and ashamed simultaneously.
It gets worse. So I also know Richard Taylor a bit, and I'd seen him at Comic-Con this year and told him I was coming down, and he said, that's excellent. We'll be there, so come on down. And Richard and Greg walked me through dozens of shops with hundreds of people working on every imaginable thing. I met Peter the Master Sword Maker. I met all these. I saw all these sets from Minas Tirith, all several sizes and boats, the Venture from King Kong, 25 feet long.
Can you describe that facility?
Yeah,
well,
like, what's the entrance? Yeah, like you're driving down the road.
It's
not
one building. It's actually a host of buildings over in this part of Wellington, and I can't remember the name of the area of Wellington that it's in, and I know there's a bunch of Kiwis yelling at the podcast
right
now.
That's fine. That's what podcasts are for. That's the radio in your car.
It felt very much like Industrial Light and Magic when I first got there in the late 90s, which is Industrial Light and Magic used to be both sides of Kerner Boulevard and San Rafael here. All the buildings. Mm-hmm. Just pointed to anyone and there was a George's building.
You start with one and as you expand, you just go, we'll lease that building.
There's digital,
that one,
that's a shooting stage. Yep. That's another shooting stage. That's a machine shop. There's camera department. That's the model shop. And it's the same thing over at Weta. There's a compound, a main compound. And all these buildings are nondescript.
Yeah.
Of course you get in the cab, you say, I'm going to Weta workshop. And they're like, oh, okay. And they know exactly where mm-hmm. that is.
Yeah.
But it is just building after building after building. And it was so satisfying because I lament the loss of Industrial Light and Magic's model shop. Those folks, the men and women that I work with there, just they formed me in a significant way. And it felt like going home. The people at Weta could not have been nicer, you know, there are a lot of fans among them and a lot who just know my skill base and know where I come from. Yeah. So it was every conversation was, as someone once said to me, started in the middle.
I assume you have a little bit different experience than a civilian coming through on a tour like that or on a visit like that.
Yeah.
But okay. So I think we should at some point spend a whole time talking about Weta.
I have pictures. I actually have some pictures. Yeah. So let's do a podcast.
And
about
if you give
Weta.
Me the pictures, I'll put them up and yes. We can watch them on the laptop and then we'll show them on screen.
But I also, but
the future.
Yeah. We also, then Peter Jackson joined us.
What? That makes a lot of sense because the third Hobbit movie is still coming out. So this is interesting.
And he turns out to be very similar to Guillermo and I in his prop collecting habits. And we went
goodness.
To one of his caves and spent about 2.5 hours geeking out over all sorts of props and objects and things. He has an unfathomable collection of amazing stuff.
Oh my God. Peter Jackson.
When you hit Peter Jackson's cave or Guillermo's house or whatever, like, does the same thing happen to you that happens to people when they walk in here?
No,
where you just kind of be like,
with myself,
you know, make the face or.
And then I'm trying to have a conversation with someone while I'm just staring.
I watched that happen a dozen. I'm sure you've seen that happen hundreds of times at this point.
Absolutely.
And like it happens to
everybody who walks in.
I assume that if it doesn't happen to something, either they're completely overwhelmed and just kind of frozen, which you've talked about before, or they're bad people and you shouldn't associate with them.
Hostile.
Yeah, it's not good.
Some people don't like being overwhelmed.
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Interesting, because I've been there once.
Yeah.
And I was there in between the release of Two Towers and Return of the King.
Yeah.
And the city was actually decked out to celebrate the success of those movies and the cultural phenomenon. I think in the middle of one square, they had a giant, like 30-foot statue of an orc or a troll or something.
Yeah.
Was that city also
No.
In
but
full Hobbit mode?
You went in New Zealand, everybody, I can't say, it would be wrong to say that everyone laid their claim on Peter Jackson, but it's really clear that the entire country takes a great pride in having played such a central and important role in such a great series of movies. Mm. I mean, the Lord of the Rings films are just so important and so beautiful. And New Zealand, in all of its ecosystems, it's an astonishing country for the breadth of climates that it encompasses. And so just to continue on, and we'll cover the Weta visit in another podcast, but that night that I was finished, I spent about 7 hours at Weta, all told. And that after that, I took the cab back to the hotel, got in a car with Julia, and we drove north for about 3 hours, 3.5 hours, to the southern end of the biggest lake in the southern hemisphere, Lake Taupo. It's the big body of water right in the middle of the North Island of New Zealand. Okay. Sadly, we did not get to the South Island, which is apparently a whole, its own unbelievable thing.
Is it a completely different ecosystem, or is it?
It's very different. What everyone in New Zealand says, smiling slightly, is, oh, it's totally different. I don't know what exactly.
Dinosaurs are, I guess. Right, I don't know. Yes,
Isla Nublar.
Isla Nublar.
Yeah, there you go.
Isla Nublar.
At any rate, we didn't realize as we pulled into the hotel that we'd spent the last hour driving past Mount Doom in the dark. Because Tongariro Park is there, and the volcano that was Mount Doom, which is at this time of year covered with snow.
Yeah.
And mostly lost in the clouds. So the next morning we got up in this beautiful bed and breakfast, and the proprietor showed us a couple of great hikes, and we drove back down south to a couple of beautiful little hikes in Tongariro State Park, which is like looking up at this beautiful volcano. We went to this waterfall where part of The Hobbit was shot. And then we spent the rest of the day driving up north back to Auckland. Now, when you're driving up through the center of the country, you can take Route 1 is the big highway. It's the two-lane road that heads all the way through New Zealand. But past Lake Taupo, you can actually take these little side roads all the way north. And that's what we did through farm country, all these little tiny hilly roads.
Sheep farms, cows.
Yeah. It was like everything you saw was so beautiful. You were like, oh, look, oh, look. And at a certain point, we like passed this field of baby sheep playing with each other with their little furry fetlocks dark, and like they look like they were wearing leg warmers. And Julia was like, now they're just showing off. Come on. Oh, and there's a sign that says Hobbiton this way, because that's where Hobbiton is.
Right.
We didn't even go. We didn't need to. It all looks like Hobbiton.
Oh,
little wisps of smoke rising up from the countryside. I mean, just absolutely jaw-droppingly gorgeous.
So both Australia and New Zealand are kind of sparsely populated by our Northern California standards. I mean, yes. The cities obviously sparsely are dense, but if you average it over the whole landmass.
Oh, no. There's the same number of people in Australia as in California.
Right. And New Zealand is like, what, 16 million people or something? It's
four
very small.
4.5 million people.
Right. I knew it was not many. Off by a factor of four. Nice job, Will. Did you... Like, I find when I go someplace, when I go back to, visit family in rural parts of the East Coast, which is still much more dense than that, I kind of have, like, almost space shock, like the crush of humanity coming back on me when I come to San Francisco, which isn't a super-duper dense city by, like, Northeast standards. Did you have any kind of...
The culture shock I had coming back was actually just, I really found the populace of... New Zealand and Australia, both from a direct audience interaction point of view, from a meet and greet point of view. You know, we have meet and greets after every performance. And then from the indirect of just walking through all the cities, because we went walking everywhere. We went to really good food. We had great, I'll tell you, the hamburger has been brought to a high art form in Australia. And I'm not being facetious. There's some really good food happening in all of the cities we went to.
Describe the hamburger, the best one.
I'm really hungry, so I'm interested. So many different amazing hamburgers. In one place, this food truck place in Auckland, they cut up beets and put them into the burger patty.
Okay, I'm feeling this so far.
It was phenomenal. It was like bloody, right? It looks bloody. Mm. Oh, fantastic.
The beets are awesome and taste good.
Oh, they love beets down under. Well, and in New Zealand, they love beets significantly. They were in a lot of the food we were eating. The fries, I don't mean to say that it's all stadium food, because it's not.
Right.
But in general, the populace was incredibly happy. I mean, really, that was really notable. It was just good-natured countries.
Things were good.
What do most people do there?
It depends upon the city you're in. You know, there's big cosmopolitan cities like Sydney and Brisbane, where it's like, you know, they have they have all sorts of things that you'd have in a city. They
normal
have the
city
arts
jobs.
And they have, yeah. In Perth, it's a lot of mining. There's a lot of people making a lot of money in mining. Apparently, the economy in Perth is similar to what's going on in North Dakota, where, you know, even mid-level jobs pay really well because it's hard to find people to fill those jobs. There's a lot
you're talking,
of
you're talking about
mining.
The fracking boom, right?
Yeah, the fracking boom in North Dakota. So coming back into the United States, where in general, walking down the street here in San Francisco, especially in my neighborhood in the Mission, there's a certain level of aggression. And it's, I don't mean to say, I want to be careful about saying this. I don't mean to say Americans are aggressive. It's more just like there was a gentility to the populace of Australia, New Zealand that I don't find in my city right now. And that makes me kind of sad.
The thing that I found the last time I went to Canada is something as simple as when the crosswalk is counting down and it has 10 seconds left and somebody's in turning right out of the street that it has the green light right now.
Yeah.
The Canadians stop, motion the car through the traffic light because they're like, well, pal, you're not going to get through if I start walking, even right. though I could totally make it.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Just general common decency.
There was a lot of common decency. That being said, I can't even describe how much we missed our dogs.
Oh, I can't imagine for a month and a half.
Norm was a total mensch, an uber mensch, and Norman, can I say her name?
Yeah, sure.
On the radio?
Yeah. On the radio.
Tonica stayed in our house with the dogs for a couple of weeks.
I got to house it.
We call her his special that. Lady friend on the other show.
Special lady friend. And it's awesome having Norm stay at your house, by the way, because he takes awesome pictures of your dogs in your house.
I don't have dogs my own. Well, time to take more photos.
Yeah. That was like one of the best fringe benefits of having you stay there. It was great. So luckily we didn't have to board the dogs for more than 2 days for the whole time.
Oh, that's awesome. Because they turn into monsters if you board them for like five. I mean, my
super
dog.
Super stressful for them.
Well, yeah. And they can, like, we take Chloe when she gets boarded to a place where it's like, it's daycare basically.
Right.
So she runs around in a pack all day, but 5 days of that and she comes back an absolute monster. So, you know, she's called the wild. She's snarling and it takes two or three days to get her back to normal again and kind of calm her back down. So,
and we just lay down and let the dogs lick our faces for like an hour.
Oh, I'm sure they were thrilled to see.
Yeah, they're practically, you know how Huxley, my bigger dog, when he gets excited, he kind of squirms from side to side. We were like joking, he's going to hurt his back, like bending with glee. And actually, when I sat down in our foyer to receive him and be like, oh, come here and lick my face, he has all sorts of different excited sounds. You know, he can be like, oh, 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 oh. When he sees people he particularly loves. But when we came home after 5 weeks, he was like, oh, it was such I've never heard the sound. It was like, oh God, why did you go away for so long?
Do they get mopey? Like my dad's dog, when he...
I don't know.
They got mopey.
They're
mopey at least for a couple days.
Oh, like just laying by the door waiting?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's so sad. The mopey dog is the saddest dog of all.
I'll tell you about food. Also, in Australia, New Zealand, here's a place that we went to in... where was it? In Auckland, okay?
Okay.
This is Cafe Hanoi.
Okay.
Phenomenal Vietnamese food. Like... I think out of 31 days, we had 5 meals that weren't Asian food. The thing is, Asia is a 3-hour flight.
Right.
Yeah. Right? To Bali or Vietnam.
It's like going to Vegas here.
Right. It is.
Or
just
Hawaii, I guess.
Everyone goes all the time. And the food, the Asian food, is just of an order we just don't get here. Things were just unique and different. We discovered this. We had this dish we hadn't had before. It's Vietnamese, called banh xiu, which is a battered pancake with pork and shrimp and cabbage, and it's fantastic. Really, really delicious. We came home. We made it.
Oh, really? Made
some. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like the recipes.
We found a recipe, and it's a little like okonomiyaki, except with no egg. There's no egg in the batter. So it cooks totally
differently. So it's just like flour and water and cornstarch?
I think so. And I can't remember the actual ingredients because Julia mixed that part up. But what you do after you make this pancake with mung beans and shrimp and pork and some seasoning is you then take a thing of lettuce, a leaf of lettuce, and you put the bit of the pancake on there with some mint and you dip it in this sweet sauce and eat it. Oh, it's phenomenal. Oh, man, and it was like good. Every Asian meal we had was like introducing us to a new type of cuisine.
It's that's fascinating. That like my favorite thing about going outside the country is food, because it's a completely different experience everywhere you go.
Yeah, and really also not realizing like, oh right, Australia's sitting right there under the Philippines and all of Asia, so it's going to have some really different takes.
Did you have
we had one dish that what's that?
Oh no, go ahead.
We had one dish that totally floored us, which was Korean fried cauliflower. Which was like...
I like all of those things.
Yeah. Which was like... How do I describe this? Picture a tempura tempura-style fried cauliflower chunks in a heavy... Not a heavy batter, but a very well-covered batter, drowning in a beautiful, not-too-sweet sauce.
Are there air pockets inside?
No, not much.
Okay.
And yet still crispy. In the sauce. Oh, I like didn't even realize I was eating a vegetable.
Huh.
And then we ordered a second one. We're like, we have to get this again because this crap is off the hook.
I didn't think about it enough the first go around.
No, so
let's pay attention.
We did
this
a bunch
time.
Of that. We did a bunch of that.
Did you make a list of all the restaurants? I know you got business cards.
Julia has a more comprehensive list. I will. I have some photos of a couple of places we ate that were particularly notable.
You know what I've started doing over the last few years is I add. It only works if there's Yelp, but I just bookmark stuff in Yelp that's good.
Yeah.
So anything that I've been to, like that, if I'm in a city that I've been to before and I've had good meals, I can just go hit, hey, here's what's near in the bookmarks, and you get a list of like five awesome things.
Yeah. And thanks to the California legislature, you can no longer be sued for a bad Yelp review.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness we passed the law back on Yelp. Exactly what everyone already knew.
Jeez.
Did you have the roadies on, since you weren't on the buses and had that, did you, like when you were on the US tour, you kind of asked the guys who were on the crew setting up and taking down, helping you guys do the show every night, and they all knew like awesome places to eat around the country.
No, in this case, most of us were brand new. And we, you know, Julia's got the nose for that. She goes to different food blog sites and she's got the nose and goes and finds the good stuff every single time.
The Southern Hemisphere equivalent of Chowhound or whatever.
We did have one. We crossed over with two other tours. We were in the same city one night as the Bob Dylan tour. He was touring Australia, New Zealand. And on another night with the Queen tour. Brian May was touring with Adam Lambert. And on the Dylan tour, they were incredibly gracious. Our tour manager and Dylan's tour manager know each other, so they invited us over to see the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
I brought Thing One and Thing Two, who were totally blown away. But more than that, they were like, you got to come eat with us because our caterer is unbelievable. And they found them in New Zealand. So when we went to Auckland, we made sure to hire the same caterer.
Oh, nice.
The food was fantastic. Nice. That is one thing that the touring companies really do also strive for is excellent catering.
I mean, I have to imagine that makes it like if you're doing this for 30 days in a row, 26 to 30 days, like, eating bad food is the most demoralizing thing in the world, and it'll get everybody in a pissing mode.
Expensive morale, when you consider the overall thing. So,
and not just for you, but for everybody on the team,
exactly,
because a lot of people,
exactly. I actually got a nice at the end when we saw the Queen show. The tour promoter Paul Dainty, who is the co-promoted the tour with our tour promoter Magic Space down in Australia. Paul brought me back into his office at the end of the Queen show and introduced me to Brian May, which was totally amazing.
Wow.
And Queen had just spent 3 months touring. The New Zealand show was their last show before going home. And he said, he said, when is your next tour? And I said, December. And he said, how many cities? And I said, 26 cities in 31 days. And he said, oh, man, we don't do that. My hat is off to you. And I thought, I got a tip of the hat for some rigorous touring from Brian May. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I don't think there's a better place to leave it than that.
No, I think so. Oh, wait, I want to mention, yeah. I read a crap ton of books while I was on the on the trip. And a bunch of great ones.
Can we do a podcast about it?
We can totally do a podcast about it, but I just want to tell everyone right now after this podcast, go read The Martian.
Dude, I told you to do that 6 months ago. It's really good.
It floored me how yes. much I loved it. I read it in one plane flight.
It is a super fast read, and I was up until 4 o'clock in the morning finishing it after starting it at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I'm going to read it again. Oh, here's what I also got to see. I saw Chris Hadfield. He happened to be at my hotel.
Way to bury all the leads.
And you met Elvis after that, right? Jesus.
And Hadfield said, you got to listen to it. Hadfield's wife, sorry, Helena, said, you have to listen to it. The reading of it. The audiobook is fantastic, apparently. Who? So I'm going to download it and listen to it.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know.
It might be the author, but apparently because it's all first person.
Yeah.
Right? It's all first person narrative. And
that's a good, and a lot of people, that's the easy way to get into a book.
It's totally the easy way to get into a book. And look, there are some books that I think are better listening to them. Hitchens, God is Not Good.
Neil Stevenson's
so good
an
listening to him. Oh.
Because they do the chants, and you could, like, my idea of what the chants were in that and what the chants were as intended. Yeah. Completely different.
Yeah, really and that's great. I listened to American Gods, a full cast recording.
Yeah, then that's everybody should read American Gods. American Gods is 99 cents on Kindle pretty much all the time now on Amazon.
Just go get it. It's
just
great.
Go get it and read it if you know. But we should do it.
But The Martian.
The Martian. The Martian's the book I want to say just killed me and was so amazing.
The setup, the first chapter, maybe chapter and a half of that is so. It is an unbelievable first chapter of a book. And
you
gets
have to read it.
There.
I'll read it.
So that we can do a cast on it, because the thing about it is everything in it is technologically feasible now.
It has been for 10, 15 years.
And what that does is there are no leaps of like, and then I grabbed the hollow spoon laser beam and fixed. No.
It's not this even. He doesn't cheat. Or at least I didn't see anybody cheating.
No, there's no cheating.
Did Hadfield agree?
He totally agreed. He was like, I want to know who that guy spoke to at NASA, because he clearly knows his stuff in a deep, deep way. Hadfield wrote one of the blurbs on the back.
Well, and he clearly, like from talking to him about, because when we were talking to him about asparagus, eating asparagus in space, he was like, well, one of the things we have to figure out is how to do food in zero G, because you can't cook food and we can't do enough prepackaged foods. We got to, something's got to give, and we got to figure that out. So
there was this funny moment. So the way somebody texted me and said, you know that Hadfield's in Sydney, and I think he might even be at your hotel. And whenever that usually gets said, it's not the case.
Right.
But I texted him, because text still works even internationally. And I was like, are you in my hotel? I'm in room 1901. And I sent it. My phone rang. And I practically
like the room
jumped.
Phone?
Yeah.
Nice.
And he was like, I'm downstairs.
That's amazing. That's so good. Okay. Now, hold on. I'm gonna say this again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to... Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, well, I think that'll just about do it for us this week.
Would anyone like a cupcake?
Oh, no, that's just mean. They have such good cupcakes. We'll be back next week with another edition of Still Untitled. It might be a book cast.
It might be another
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy spoiler cast. We should totally do that.
It could be Australia. I kind of want to go see it again before we talk about it. So,
you want to do that tonight? I'm sure my kids would be willing.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.